Case number 09-1204, Apache Corporation petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Waxman for petitioner, Ms. Banta for respondent.
May it please the court. This case presents an important substantive issue of natural gas regulation and procedural issues under the Administrative Procedure Act. The substantive issue is whether a monopoly pipeline like Energex may lease away capacity that captive shippers like Apache need in order to reach their customers without giving those shippers even the opportunity to compete for that capacity. The correct answer to that question, the answer that is consistent with three separate lines of FERC precedent and the open access regime of its landmark order 436, is no. The commission said yes, reflexively, without explaining departures from its own precedent, and without meaningfully engaging the substantial evidence of harm that Apache presented. At a minimum, FERC's orders fail the basic requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act. Apache is a natural gas producer. It is almost completely dependent on Energex to transport gas from its wells to its customers. Over 90% of Apache's wells, and that's over 900 wells, are completely captive to Energex's monopoly pipeline system. As this court has recognized repeatedly, FERC has a fundamental obligation to protect captive shippers from harm at the hands of monopoly pipelines and thereby to protect the public interest in the efficient transportation of gas to end users.
Can I ask you on the undue discrimination argument, who is the similarly situated party?
I think we answered the question yes, no, but who, our principal...
Who is the similarly situated party to Apache?
I think Energex is the most similarly situated party to Apache. I'm sorry, Mid-Continent is the most similarly situated party because as FERC has recognized in its opinions, capacity leases are the functional equivalent of firm transportation service under Section 284. Now, we also made an argument.
The rehearing argument, you said that the discrimination is not between Mid-Continent, the lessee, and the other Energex shippers, including Apache. What are we supposed to do with that?
I think you should, I mean, I don't think I can do a better job orally than our reply brief does in Section 1C of the reply brief, in which we explain that that is properly interpreted as an alternative argument. It was made after we repeated in our rehearing petition that there was discrimination in favor of Mid-Continent against Apache. And in any event, as Your Honor knows, there is a second line of non-discrimination precedents that we cited both in our initial order and our rehearing order, which is that undue discrimination is prevented by FERC's heretofore consistent requirement that the pipeline that wants to lease capacity to another pipeline has to demonstrate that that capacity is available but unsubscribed. That is, that no shippers wanted that capacity.
Before you go on to that, let me just pursue, if I could, the question Judge Kavanaugh was asking you about the Commission's argument that your current argument about who the comparison to, that is, that it's to Mid-Continent, was not presented to the commission on your petition for rehearing, and you say it was an alternative argument, and even if you could read it that way, my question is that you, for the proposition here that discrimination is between Mid-Continent and your client, you cite these, you cite three major cases, Texas Eastern, Columbia, and Dominion, but I couldn't find any place in your petition for rehearing where you cited those cases to the commission. In other words, where you said to the commission that the decision it's made is inconsistent with those three cases.
I think
did
that's...
Did I misread it?
I don't think you missed anything, or if you did, Judge Tatel, I missed it too. Mm-hmm. We did cite Texas Eastern,
but
and
a different proposition. Not for this. You're exactly right.
That is correct. A rehearing petition didn't cite those cases which go to the first line of precedent that we say that the commission ignored. But our rehearing petition did cite, unless memory is failing me, the cases that support the second line of anti-discrimination, which is...
That I agree. I agree with you about that. But given that we agree on the first point, isn't the commission's argument then that this issue is forfeited actually pretty solid?
I think...
Because you didn't... Apache did not... The Apache's argument before the commission is that the decision the commission made is inconsistent with prior precedent, these three cases. Yet the petition for rehearing didn't cite those three cases, give the commission a chance to explain it.
I take your point, and I stand on the reply that we've given. I don't think that level of specificity has been required by this court or properly required, but in any event, there's no doubt that we made both the harm and the discrimination argument in our rehearing papers. Their order on rehearing addresses both in different sections, and they have never addressed, not even in their brief in this court, the discrimination line of cases that includes Dominion, Midwestern, Gulf South, and Gulf Crossing, that says there is a requirement that the lessor pipeline demonstrate, usually through an open season, that the capacity that wants to lease out to another monopoly pipeline is unsubscribed and available and no customer wanted it.
But just again, before we get to this one, I just want to close off one more point about that first issue. Are you not making the argument that the discrimination is with respect to Mid-Continent's shippers?
We have included in our brief to you let me just come as clean as I can in the context of effective advocacy. We think the much stronger argument is as to Mid-Continent under FERC's precedence, because FERC has said that capacity leases are the functional equivalent.
I understand, but except for the parentheses, I don't see an argument made, the same argument made with respect to the shippers. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair.
Okay.
The only argument we make is included in parentheses.
Okay.
There is a separate line of precedent. This is the third line of precedent that FERC has not appropriately acknowledged or dealt with or explained in denying our request for firm transportation, and that is the related but independent requirement that as FERC's precedents say, that it must find that, quote, the lease arrangement does not adversely affect existing customers. And the two cases
is there much of a difference between the test of harm, between that line of cases and your discrimination harm cases? Is it basically the same, that in both of those lines, FERC has said that there has to be a showing of no adverse effect? Is there any difference?
The two tests often overlap in practice, and in fact, both of them can be satisfied by showing that we had an open season for this capacity and no existing shippers subscribed. Therefore, this is available unsubscribed capacity. But there are two sort of distinct lines that were adopted in Order 436 in imposing the open access regime at this court's direction under Maryland People's Council. And there are instances in which harm may be satisfied, but not discrimination or vice versa, but they do very largely overlap. I want to say that...
Let me pursue that.
I'm sorry, Judge Tatum.
The argument, I understand your argument about the need for an open season, but that doesn't turn on the question of whether Apache suffered any harm, does it?
It's a way of showing non-harm. That is, if Apache were in fact given the opportunity to compete for this firm transportation or the functional equivalent of it and didn't bid or was outbid by Mid-Continent or other shippers or other people, this court would hold the harm component to be, FERC would properly hold harm to be satisfied.
Setting aside that part of your argument, what's your answer to the commission's position in its order on rehearing and here that the problem, the harm that Apache faced here wasn't from the lease, but was from the nature of its interruptible service?
Well, two things. Yeah. First of all, all of the commission's prior harm cases talk about adversely affecting existing customers. There is no case that I'm aware of up until Gulf Crossing, which was decided only 3 months before this and in which Apache, the same Enerjex Interstate Pipeline, no case has distinguished for harm purposes between interruptible or firm shippers, and for good reason.
About Columbia, which the commission, that's the case it cited.
I'm sorry,
Judge. Columbia Gas, that's what it cited for the proposition that it said that it declined to mitigate interruptible customers' service because it wasn't a legal harm. It was in the nature of the service.
I don't believe that Columbia stands for that proposition. I could be wrong, but I don't believe that Columbia even identified whether the shippers were firm or interruptible. There are some FERC cases that mention firm shippers in some context, but for the most part, they recite the test that the commission faithfully recites here, which is there must be a showing that the lease arrangement doesn't adversely affect existing customers without distinguishing. And in fact, this court.
Gulf Crossing is one of them, right? I mean, you're saying that.
Gulf Crossing is essentially this case. They were brought at the same time. It was the same pipeline. It was a different lease. And we think the commission made the same error. We weren't a party in that case.
What's wrong with the commission saying this is interruptible service to begin with, so you don't have much of a right to begin with? And in any event, you can still get interruptible service from the NOJEX. And by the way, you can also take advantage of the open season to become one of the firm customers of Mid-Continent. So you have a lot of options here, and given the benefits that the commission has long identified from leases, that's good enough. What's wrong with that?
Those are, I think, at least three really good questions, Judge Kavanaugh. And I'll just note that I'm well into my rebuttal time, and I'm going to throw myself at the court's mercy, recognizing that I have no say in this. But I want to make sure I address all of your questions. I'll take the last one first. We were not in a position, for reasons that we've explained in our brief, to take advantage of the firm transportation that Mid-Continent was offering, because this was an unbelievably extraordinary lease. Mid-Continent is leasing up to 265 decatherms a day from the West Zone, which is where all of Apache's wells are and all of Apache's contracts to deliver require the delivery points in. But Mid-Continent's lease only permits it to deliver gas in the Far East, in Bennington, to interconnect with its pipeline that goes to the east. So this was not capacity that we could have availed ourselves of. It wasn't an alternative for us, even leaving aside the fact that we have a long-term contract in which we dedicate our gas to Enerjex for transportation. That's number one. That was number three.
Interruptible service on Enerjex.
Right. So interruptible service, this court has recognized in the Arkansas Power and Light case, in ASARCO and another one I can't remember, that there isn't a categorical distinction between interruptible service and firm service for all purposes. And in its harm, the whole harm line of cases other than Gulf Crossing, the commission has never distinguished between the two, and for good reasons. That is, first of all, when we contracted with Energex to provide service, as our briefs reflect, we contracted for a what was called interruptible plus priority, not because we negotiated a great deal, but because under FERC's approved statement of operating conditions at the time, Energex was authorized to provide that. We got the highest priority that we could. FERC then, in a subsequent rate proceeding, without anybody asking it to, said, oh, no, that's discrimination, and discrimination can't be held even between different classes of shippers. So what FERC has now done is taken away the priority that we contracted for in dedicating our wells to this pipeline, consistent with the FERC-approved statement of conditions, and FERC has now taken that priority and given it to Mid-Continent without giving us even an opportunity to compete. Judge Kavanaugh, I don't recall your third question. Your first question
was that interruptible service by its nature is interruptible.
Right. Interruptible service by its nature is interruptible. First of all, we have no choice because of FERC's rules, FERC's decision not to require Section 311 pipelines to offer firm service. We had no choice but to get interruptible. And sure, when we signed up for interruptible service, we understood that firm service would have a priority. Firm transportation service would have a priority. But we also understood from Regulation 284.7b that if and when Energex ever decided to offer firm service or its functional equivalent under the non-discrimination mandate, we would have the opportunity to compete for it. That's what we asked for here, and that's what was denied.
I want to pursue this just with one more question here, but set aside for just a moment, for purposes of my question, this question of not being given an opportunity to compete for it in an open season. And let's just go back to the question of harm, okay? You said at the beginning that this raised an important issue under the APA. Well, you know, one way to look at this is that what the Commission is saying when it says that for the harm to be redressable, it has to be harm to a legal interest, that is, firm capacity. It's interpreting its own Islander East decision. It's interpreting the third factor, that is no harm to existing shippers. And we normally give great deference to an agency's interpretation of its own decisions.
Well,
don't we have to do that here?
No, if FERC had provided an explanation for why it was disregarding its prior categorical precedent that says you have to show that the lease doesn't harm existing shippers, and said, well, you know, it's true that we've said that, and it's true that maybe some of our prior cases involved both firm shippers and interruptible shippers, but we've now decided for the following policy reasons that it should be applied this way. That may be invalid, and I would argue that it is under the Natural Gas Act and Order 436, but we wouldn't have the APA procedural argument that we have here. Just to be clear, Judge Tatel, our APA argument is there's really two kinds of fundamental APA error here. Mm-hmm. One is we have three lines of precedent that we relied on. Now, I know there's a debate about whether one of those lines we waived in our rehearing petition. We think we didn't, but in any event, we're still left with two. You cannot read their initial order or their rehearing order and conclude that they have fairly engaged with and explained why this case is different than what all of the orders and all of the cases that we cited said. That's number one. Number two, they at least have to make, unless as a matter of law, an interruptible shipper's lot in life is to be harmed, and an interruptible shipper can expect nothing other than than disappointment and desolation, which would be wrong as a matter of the commission's regulations, because the commission's regulations themselves say, Order 436 says that a decision by an intrastate pipeline to cease providing interruptible service must be non-discriminatory. Unless you accept their argument that interruptible shippers, as a matter of law, can never be harmed, you know, they can yell and scream and put on expert witnesses, but we will see their lips moving, but we won't be able to hear anything that they're saying. Then we get to the issue of whether they have really engaged with the evidence of actual serious harm that Apache presented to the commission, both in terms of argument, in terms of statements of their own Energex's own chief operating officer, and our two experts. And as we've explained in our brief, there is evidence that the commission never even addressed, not even acknowledged in its initial order and rehearing order. And the ones that it did address, the responses that it provided are irrational. And that doesn't satisfy Tesoro and the many other cases of the circuit that require active engagement.
Suppose they converted the third prong of Islander East from a strict requirement, no adverse harm, into a component of a balancing test. Is that a problem?
I don't think they would have to do it, because there already is a balancing test that applies, and the way that the balancing test applies, and this
well, is, I, let me yeah. be clear then. As I read Islander East, the FERC had to show no adverse effects on existing customers. As I read the order here, and I'm going to ask FERC counsel about this, it seems to subtly transform into, well, if there are some adverse effects, you weigh them against the benefits of the lease.
Right.
And they might have subtly transformed that third factor into, instead of you have to show no adverse effects, it's more of a balance, the adverse effects against the benefits. If they did that, is that a problem?
I think, you know, I don't know about, I wouldn't say subtly shifting, I would say eliding. In order to balance harms, which under their certificate policy statement, which under their Texas gas decision, they apply to capacity leases, the way you balance the harm is to do the following. First, you have to squarely confront, identify, and evaluate the harm to the shipper. You must require that the harm be eliminated if it can be. If it can't be, that it be mitigated, and that after mitigation, you then weigh that residual harm to existing customers against the public benefits of the lease. And that's how the analysis works under their precedent.
I have two questions for you. They already can sell firm service intrastate. Is that right?
Under my understanding, I think the answer is no. And the reason is that although Energex, as a matter of state law, does provide firm transportation service intrastate, the only customers that can offer it are end users and local distribution companies. So in fact, Apache, as a producer, cannot and does not have any.
I guess what I'm asking is, aren't you already subject to the risk of an expansion of firm service, firm intrastate service? And since you're concerned about intrastate, you already have this problem.
Right. We are certain when we took interruptible service under Section 311, whether it was interruptible plus or just plain vanilla interruptible, we knew that we would have a lower priority to purely intrastate firm service. It's no secret that Oklahoma produces a lot more natural gas than it consumes. If we had a problem of shut-in, that would have been an issue of state law for the Oklahoma Utility Commission. But what we didn't understand, and properly so, it was that when and if Energex decided to enhance its status as a participant in the interstate transportation of gasoline, not only offering interruptible 311 service, but by offering a huge capacity lease in interstate transportation with an interstate pipeline, that we wouldn't be able to fairly compete for that firm service. In fact, the commission's regulations state exactly the opposite.
All right, let me ask you one more question. The one of the two reasons you gave for why you can't contract for firm service from Mid-Continent was that they don't deliver in the West Zone, only in the East Zone, right?
Correct.
And both of those are in Oklahoma, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Could they have, consistent with the anti-discrimination rule, could Energex itself had said, we're going to offer firm service but only to the East Zone and not to the West Zone? Or would that be discriminatory?
That would definitely be discriminatory. I don't know of any decision.
So isn't, in a way, your argument that if you, don't you actually have a discrimination argument with respect to the shippers of Mid-Continent, that in effect what's going on here is that they are offering a kind of firm service. Yes, it's available to you, but they're not offering firm service to any location. They're only offering it to a location you can't take.
That's correct, as to Mid-Continent and its shippers. I mean, they are, you know, with a, under this lease, with a flick of a valve, 265,000 decaderms per day can be shut off from the west, the entire west zone, for purposes of delivery to the east, when, as the evidence that that with respect FERC never engaged in, showed that even before this lease, Apache was already being shut in, and the capacity in the west zone of Energex's system was already otherwise constrained.
What percentage of that, just curious, of Energex capacity is that?
Is 265?
Yeah.
I'll have an answer for you at the rebuttal time, but for purposes of the capacity, it's a lot. I mean,
it was much smaller than the original proposal. Wasn't the original proposal?
The original proposal, I don't think, can be taken seriously. It was 800,000. But the real constraint here, I want to make sure that the court understands what the record shows, and it's in the affidavits and the evidentiary submission that we made. The constraint in Energex's system is in the West Zone. And the three prior leases concerned the East Zone almost exclusively. And as the evidence showed, there are four pipelines in Energex's system transmitting gas from the West out. And they were already capacity constrained before this capacity lease was entered. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Carol Banta for the Commission. I think I'll begin with this last point. It goes to the larger question here of leasing away Energex's capacity. That term was used a lot by petitioner. Of course, this capacity isn't disappearing into a black hole, as Judge Kavanaugh's question recognized. It is going to service on an interstate pipeline, a full NGA open access that not only offers firm service, as Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, but interruptible as well. So the capacity is still being used. It didn't disappear. And in fact, Mid-Continent held an open season, which Apache and the various other shippers on Energex were.
Energex didn't hold an open season.
It did not.
And
but
that's their point. That's
it is
Apache's
one of.
Point. Apache's point is that under Gulf Crossing, that's what Gulf Crossing says you need to needs to happen to avoid harming the existing shippers. And the point is that the Commission hasn't adequately dealt with that precedent.
Well, what the Commission did, if you look at the way they raised the open season on rehearing, it is at JA 217 and a couple pages after that. They raised it as a remedy to avoid discrimination. It was after the similarly situated argument. So the Commission did address it in the rehearing order. It's true we didn't talk much about the open season cases in our brief because we focused on if you don't have similarly situated, you don't.
What is the Commission's response to the Apache's argument that under Gulf Crossing there needs to be an open season before the lease is consummated, and that didn't happen here?
Right. That's
their argument.
It is in the rehearing order, paragraph 17.
No, just tell me, yeah.
Oh, the commission addressed the three cases that had been raised with regard to open season on rehearing and distinguished those. Two of those cases never came up again on appeal.
Right, but so, Gulf Crossing.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And so, first of all, in both cases, the lessor, I think in all of those cases, the lessor, the equivalent of Enegex here, the lessor was an interstate pipeline. Let me clarify. The Gulf Crossing case had two different leases in the same case. One was Enegex's lease to Gulf Crossing. There was no discrimination argument presented there, so the commission did not address discrimination as it referred to Enegex, the non-NGA jurisdictional pipeline leasing. The discrimination analysis in the Gulf Crossing case concerned Gulf South leasing capacity to Gulf Crossing.
Yeah, but the argument was that it was discriminatory, right?
And the commission looked at open.
The commission said,
right.
This is what they say in their. This is what Apache says in their brief. They say in response, the commission said that that the answer to that was to have an open season.
Well, that's because the lessor itself, Gulf South, already provided firm service to any takers under its open access tariff. That's the difference. It wasn't in the same position as Enegex, which does not. So this was saying, do you have firm customers already because you're offering full access, non-discriminatory access to firm service, mm-hmm. Gulf South yourself, as an NGA open access shipper? Did you make sure none of your firm customers wanted that? In addition, there was an affiliate concern. And the commission did talk about that in the Gulf Crossing order. Gulf Crossing and Gulf South were affiliates. So there was also a concern that there had been a sweetheart deal and offering it to Gulf South's own existing firm customers under the NGA Interstate Open Access Tariff was a fair way to make sure there was no sweetheart deal with Gulf Crossing. In the part of the Gulf Crossing decision that talked about the lease from Enegex, well, none of that was discussed. You didn't have an affiliate, and you didn't have a lessor who was an NGA Open Access shipper. That's the distinction, and the commission pointed that out in rehearing order paragraph 17. In both Islander East and Gulf Crossing, the lessor was an interstate pipeline.
Is the commission saying that there's no adverse impact here?
I think the commission said a couple of things about that, and I'm glad you directed me to that.
Because there's some ambiguity. So
I think what the commission did maybe more than it even needed to. I think the commission might well have stopped at saying this is interruptible.
Right.
But
by definition, there's no adverse impact, but it didn't stop there.
It didn't. It said also we're going to look, first of all, let's be clear, that Enegex has not eliminated Section 311 interruptible service because.
And under your theory, it could. That is, if interfering with interruptible service has no adverse impact, theoretically there would be no limitation at all and the entire capacity could be leased.
Well, if it were eliminated entirely, I think that Mr. Waxman is correct that the regulation says that if an intrastate pipeline acting providing interstate interruptible service seeks to eliminate that service and stop offering it, they do have to do so on a non-discriminatory basis. So we would just have to.
Well, how much do they have to eliminate before? I don't understand.
Well, stop offering it. I mean, and that
they're not going to stop offering. Your answer, in a way, to Judge Kavanaugh's first question was no adverse impact because they're only interruptible, so they can be interrupted. Can you bring them down to zero by eliminating, or to almost zero, not completely zero, and not by saying we won't give you interruptible service? It's just we're interrupting everything.
Well, I think the commission, instead of drawing a bright line there, in this case, went ahead and looked and said, this isn't going to bring you down to zero, so we don't have to decide that in this case.
Well, did they make any evaluation of how much they are? That seemed like a second, an even-if argument by the commission. Is that wrong?
I think it probably was, to some extent. It was saying, because you don't have a legal claim to any set amount, and interruptible is, by definition interruptible, this isn't harm, but we're also going to look, and we're going to look at this lease, and we.
Do we have to decide the first question? Is that good enough?
Well, I think the commission did the even if, I don't know that it didn't rest entirely on the first question.
Well,
right. So the answer to Judge Garland's question is we don't have to decide the first question.
I think that's right, but and
that's if we agree with you on the second.
If we agree with you on the second.
Wait. Oh, I see. But suppose. But let me ask the same question. my colleagues are asking a different way, okay? I look at paragraph 18, and paragraph 18 says, there's no harm because the service is interruptible. End of case. That's the way paragraph 18 reads.
Yes.
Okay.
But
then you move on the next section, and it reads like a balancing test. This is paragraph 26.
Yes.
So am I right that paragraph 18 is an independent decision, or I mean, are you telling us that we can sustain the commission's decision here on the basis of paragraph 18 alone? Is that an independent basis for the commission's decision?
I think
so,
it could be, yes.
How do we know that given paragraph 26, which treats it as a balancing test?
Right. Well, the commission also treats it as balancing if you go to paragraph 19, which is right after paragraph 18.
Yes, that we understand.
Right.
That part of the commission's order is clear.
Okay.
19 came after 18. But what about the rest of this?
Well, I think that's why the commission didn't, for whatever reason, the commission chose not just to stand, maybe to be to give full consideration, be as attentive to the questions raised as possible. It said, we don't think this would be harm, but we are going to look at the impact on this in paragraph 25. We don't believe that a shut-in is likely to result from the lease.
Paragraph 25 read to me like what the commission was dealing with this in paragraph, leading up to paragraph 25. It seemed to me the commission was not dealing with whether the harm was legal or not, but whether the capacity restraints created any injury.
Well, that's right.
To Apache, and you concluded in those paragraphs that even if they did limit capacity, it was outweighed by the benefits of the lease.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That is, and
so I go back to my question. Is that a separate analysis from the question of whether the harm was legal or not?
I think the commission put them together. I don't know that.
I don't know. How can we sustain this?
I think what the commission thought it was doing was that the first answer is there's no legal claim, so that could be the end of it. The commission was just taking the extra step to be attentive to the concerns anyway. This is only the second time this has come up, Gulf Crossing being the first. The question, because in all of these other lease cases that have been cited, the lessor had firm shippers because they were all NGA open access pipelines that are required to offer firm. So when you were looking at the harm to existing shippers, you were looking at firm and interruptible. But Gulf Crossing, as far as I know, is the first case where the only existing customers on the lessor pipeline were interruptible. So
yeah,
it's the first time that the commission.
That is the only case out there, right? There's never been a case like this before.
I think that's right. It certainly is not the first time that an intrastate pipeline has leased to an interstate. My understanding is that does happen, but these cases are fairly new.
So this is a modification of Islander East, in the sense that the third prong of Islander East said no adverse effect. And then if you look closely at the commission's order and your brief, the word undue creeps in before adverse effect. And there's a difference between a burden and an undue burden, right? The latter is kind of a balancing test. So is it a modification or not?
I would characterize it as an interpretation that started in Gulf Crossing. The reason I say that, I'm actually glad that Mr. Waxman raised the certificate policy statement, because the commission, of course, applied that in other parts of this opinion as well when you're dealing with new construction. It has a very similar test where number one is benefits, which we haven't discussed in this case except in our brief, but I do want to emphasize, because I know the petitioner's brief said in a few places a lack of countervailing benefits, and I just want to point out that the commission in paragraphs 35 and 71 of the initial order, the certificate order, and paragraph 26 and also paragraph 43, paragraph 26 of the rehearing order found specific benefits to this lease, including that it would open it up to an NGA interstate pipeline that would
but not benefits to Mr. Waxman's client.
Right, but Islander East specifically said the benefits that we look at aren't the benefits to the people whose harm we're looking at, or whose supposed harm.
That's just to the public benefits. That's just to the first part of the Islander East.
Right. I just wanted to be clear, since we haven't discussed that, I wanted to make sure
What I'm worrying about here is whether the commission has changed course without admitting that they've changed course, not just that they want to be subtle,
right.
Or maybe they want to be subtle, but they don't want to admit. So if you would follow along with me, Look at JA 11, which is paragraph 31,
mm-hmm.
where it accurately describes the Islander East test, the first part being benefits, but there being an and, getting to number three, which says the lease arrangement does not...
Wait, I'm sorry, I'm not with you yet.
I'm sorry. JA 11 to JA 12?
Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm. Description of Islander East. The lease arrangement does not adversely affect existing customers, right?
Right.
And as Judge Kavanaugh pointed out in paragraph 43, the commission then finds that the lease arrangement will not have an unduly adverse impact, which is not the test that is just described.
And
the way in which they get there is by paragraph 32,
exactly,
which is not part of Islander East, which says, as more fully discussed below, we find the payments are satisfactory, there are significant benefits, and those benefits outweigh any potential harm to Enogexis customers. But that, the fact that it outweighs harm suggests that there is a harm.
It's a potential harm. And the commission went on, yeah. and in rehearing order paragraph 26, maybe it's hedging somewhat and saying, we don't think there's harm here because you're interruptible. We've looked and we don't think the effects of this lease even cause the harm that you're alleging here. But if there's any potential harm,
yeah.
I think the commission didn't find there was harm but addressed any potential harm. And its reading here is very consistent.
But there they say at the end of that of paragraph 26,
mm-hmm.
since interruptible shippers have no claim of right, the limited potential reduction in the capacity available cannot be viewed as undue adverse effect.
Right.
Now that word undue has crept in again. And so you've had a little back and forth with the panel about whether this is a legal right or otherwise. But all of the earlier cases do not focus on legal. They use the words like, for example, in Texas Gas Transmission, it says the project will not result in any adverse operational or economic impacts on existing customers.
Right.
There certainly is an economic impact on Apache here. And that's there may not be a legal impact in the sense they didn't have a right not to have an economic
Whereas
impact.
Whereas in Texas Gas, there would have been firm shippers because
but doesn't
it,
say,
a,
maybe,
well, it was
this
it
is
was
an
interesting an interstate,
explanation, right? But it is not the explanation offered in the order that the commission published.
What the commission found, well, also to keep in mind, Apache has cited business reasons why it didn't choose to use the capacity that Midcontinent was offering. For instance, other shippers in its same position, such as Chesapeake, which is another shipper in the West Zone, which was using the interruptible service Enogex offered.
Business reasons is another way of saying economic injury. Their economic injury here is that they don't want to deliver it where they're being offered the opportunity, and besides, they've paid for it once, and this way they have to pay for it twice.
Oh, the commission found that there was no rate stacking. The commission, and I don't know that that has really...
No rate stacking, but it is, that is as a legal matter. But are they wrong when they say they've already committed...
Well, that's different than saying they've paid for it twice. They do argue that they have a dedication obligation. The mm-hmm. commission didn't make a finding that they were captive. It alluded to the fact they have business reasons. That contract wasn't before the commission here. Mm-hmm. But... my understanding is not that they've paid for it already. They had made the argument below that they would somehow have to pay both Enogex and yeah. Midcontinent. There was a finding on that I don't think has really been challenged or dealt with on appeal, but it is in the orders, the finding of no rate stacking. But to go back to your question, and perhaps the commission was looking at Enogex's interruptible shippers in general as well as just at Apache itself, and finding that in the West Zone, that the interruptible service available in the West Zone would continue to be offered and was not going to be shut in, and to the extent that it was diminished. So maybe Apache finds that the alternatives for business reasons weren't appropriate. Chesapeake disagreed. Chesapeake found the alternative to be attractive and took that. So there are other interruptible shippers besides Apache, not all of whom have its particular contractual reason. But I do want to go back to your question. I understand that the putting undue in there, I think maybe the commission was just hedging on the finding that you are interruptible, but we also find that factually, we don't think that this is going to cut off your service. We think it's limited potential reduction, and it is consistent with the way the commission balances in the certificate policy statement where it says when we're looking at public convenience and necessity, it has to be a balance, And the worse the adverse effects are, the greater the benefits would have to be to outweigh them. And in this case, the commission pointed out a number of benefits both to leases to interstate systems in particular and to this one specifically, and found here we have maybe a claim of harm, although the legal claim of any interruptible shipper is questionable. We find that the facts just don't support that there's going to be a shut-in or a huge reduction in the available shipping. They don't have to worry about their competitor Chesapeake anymore, who's going to be using its mid-continent rights, so they won't be competing with some of the players in the market who've contracted with mid-continent. And taking all of that and the benefits of this lease, the commission said we find that the balance is in favor of the benefits of the lease, and that's how it interprets its public convenience and necessity obligation under Section 7.
Thank you.
Mr.
Waxman, you're well out of time, but we consume most of it, so you can take 2 more minutes.
Two small corrections and one, I think, at least for me anyway, a helpful overarching point. On page 115 of the joint appendix, Judge Tatel, you'll find the percentage of the capacity that this particular lease consumes. And a small correction about what Ms. Banta has said. The point here is not that Apache found itself on, it didn't want to compete for what Mid-Continent was offering for business reasons. Apache has legally binding contracts to deliver its gas to its customers in the West Zone. Bennington, which is the only delivery point, is not in the West Zone. It doesn't connect with the West Zone. And it was unavailable. It had a legal reason, a legal disability, not a business reason. And it tried to buy firm service, to compete for firm service with Energex, which said no. Now, the overarching point goes to this issue of, well, you're only interruptible and, you know, you're not firm and all that sort of stuff. Let's bear in mind what this court in Maryland People's Council told the commission that the Natural Gas Act required it to do, and what Order 436 at length and quite eloquently makes clear. Congress has required that there be a fully competitive opportunity for producers and consumers to be able to buy and sell gas to each other. There is a fully competitive market among producers, a fully competitive market among end users and local distribution companies. All of those entities are shippers, whether you call them interruptible or not, or captive or not. Both producers and consumers are shippers. The problem, and the problem addressed in Section 46, Order 436, is that the pipelines are natural monopolies, and that's why the non-discrimination obligation and the harm requirement were imposed, in order to make sure that monopoly pipelines can't line up with their hand-picked business partners who are other monopoly pipelines and suck up all the capacity that will constrain the ability of producers like Apache to sell to consumers like local utility companies and users and local distribution companies. And that fundamental policy and the respects in which the orders in this case violate it is really what FERC has failed to engage in its orders. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted.
Good talking with you.
We do.